All right, buckle up, everybody. We're diving deep into Deuteronomy.
Ooh, sounds intense.
It is. It is. Specifically, we're looking at chapter 12.
Okay.
And we're tackling this super interesting question of authorship.
Like, who wrote it?
Who wrote the book, yeah. And what this chapter tells us about the overall message.
Hmm.
Our main source for all this is a lecture by Dr. Cynthia Parker.
Oh, I know her work.
Mm.
She's like a top expert on Deuteronomy.
She is, yeah.
So how does Deuteronomy 12 fit into the whole book?
Right.
We've gone through all that history stuff and those big speeches, right?
Yeah.
But chapter 12 is where the law code starts.
Yeah.
Like all those rules and instructions.
Yeah. Chapters 12 through 26, it's a big chunk.
Right. And it can seem kind of dry, you know?
Law codes, yeah. Not exactly a page turner. But Dr. Parker, she makes a really cool point.
Hmm.
In the ancient Near East, these weren't just like random rules.
Yeah.
They were actually visions of an ideal society.
Like a utopia.
Kind of, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Reflecting the order of the universe.
Right.
Yeah, it's deep stuff. And Deuteronomy's code, it goes even further, putting Yahweh God right at the heart of everything. Not just what Israelites believe, but how they like lived it out every day.
So like practical stuff.
Super practical. Okay, but how does this connect to the whole authorship question?
Right, right. So traditionally, Moses was seen as the author of the whole Pentateuch.
Genesis, Exodus, all that.
The whole shebang. But even way back, like in the Middle Ages, Jewish scholars were noticing things.
Like what?
Well, there are inconsistencies in the text, right?
Little things that didn't quite add up.
Exactly. Which hinted that maybe there were multiple authors or editors involved.
So it wasn't just Moses sitting down and writing the whole thing himself.
Maybe not, yeah. And here's where it gets really interesting.
Okay, I'm ready.
We have not one, not two, but three different law codes within the Pentateuch.
Whoa, three.
Yeah. You got the covenant code in Exodus, the holiness code in Leviticus, and then, of course, our star, the Deuteronomic Code.
Three different sets of laws.
And the big question is, why?
Why three? Were they written by different people at different times?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it?
Is it different purposes?
Different purposes, different authors, maybe a mix of both. It's a puzzle.
It's like a biblical mystery.
Exactly. And to figure it out, scholars look for clues.
Like detectives.
Exactly. Dr. Parker uses this great analogy. She says it's like dating cars in a movie. Think about it. If you see a Model T Ford next to a brand new sports car.
Yeah.
Something seems off, right?
Yeah, the timeline's all messed up.
Exactly. So scholars analyze these clues like tone, structure, vocabulary, you know.
Textual forensics.
It is. And they try to figure out, okay, when were these different parts written? What order do they go in?
To make the timeline make sense.
Precisely. So can you give me an example of a clue like that?
Like one of those cars that seems out of place chronologically.
Okay, yeah, sure. Oh. Let's look at the laws about altars, how each code deals with them.
Altars?
Right. Because that tells us a lot about how Israelite worship practices were evolving.
Interesting. So how does it work?
Well, the covenant code, back in Exodus, it seems to allow for multiple altars.
Okay. Makes sense, right?
Yeah. Back then, the Israelites were nomadic. Always on the move.
So they needed altars wherever they went.
Makes sense, right?
Yeah.
But then by the time we get to the holiness code, things have changed.
They settled down.
Exactly. And the text kind of assumes there's only one altar.
Connected to the tabernacle.
Right. But Deuteronomy 12, that's where it gets really interesting.
Oh, why?
Well, it's like a transition phase, you know?
Mm.
It mandates one central altar for like all the important offerings, all the sacred stuff.
That's a big shift.
A huge shift. But and here's the twist. It still allows for those meat-sharing feasts.
The ones in the city gates?
Yeah. More flexible, you know? More community-oriented.
So it's like a blend of the old and the new.
Exactly. And that's why it's been such a hot topic for scholars.
They're trying to figure out, like, when did this happen?
Right. Where does Deuteronomy 12 fit on the timeline?
To get a clearer picture of when the book itself might have been written?
Exactly. And to do that, we got to look at some of the big names who shaped this whole debate.
The scholarly heavyweights.
You got it.
Yeah.
So first up, we've got Wilhelm de Wet.
De Wet.
Yeah, 19th century scholar.
Yeah.
He connected Deuteronomy to King Josiah.
King Josiah. The one who like rediscovered the Book of the Law and started those massive reforms.
That's the one. So de Wet saw clues in Deuteronomy that kind of matched up with Josiah's time.
Okay. Like what?
Well, for example, there's that prohibition against worshiping, like the sun, the moon, and stars.
Yeah.
Which was like a big thing in Assyrian and Babylonian culture back then.
So outlawing that fit with what Josiah was trying to do?
Exactly. And then there's that whole shift towards one centralized altar.
Right, right.
So Tewet's theory was that maybe, just maybe,
yeah,
Deuteronomy was written just before Josiah's reforms.
Maybe even as the book of the law that kicked it all off.
Yeah. Exactly. That's a pretty bold idea, right?
It is.
Yeah.
Okay, so Tewet links Deuteronomy to Josiah. Who else is in this lineup?
All right. Next up, we have Julius Wellhausen.
Wellhausen.
Now, he's a big name. He came up with the documentary hypothesis.
The what now?
The documentary hypothesis. Late 19th, early 20th century.
Okay.
He proposed that the Pentateuch.
Right.
It's actually woven together from four different sources.
Four sources?
Yeah. They're labeled J, E, P, and D.
Like some secret code.
Kind of.
Yeah.
And this model, it had a huge impact on how people understood the Bible.
For decades.
Yeah. So the J source, that's the Yahwist, using the name Yahweh for God.
Mm-hmm.
E is the Elohist, using Elohim.
Okay.
P is the priestly source, all about rituals and the priesthood.
Makes sense.
And D, you guessed it.
The Deuteronomist.
Bingo. Covering most of Deuteronomy.
So Wellhausen is saying that Deuteronomy, it's its own separate document.
Potentially written later than some other parts of the Pentateuch?
Not necessarily all at the same time. Exactly.
Yeah.
But did everybody agree with Wellhausen?
I mean, it's a pretty big theory.
It is. And it definitely sparked debate.
Well,
another scholar, Martin Noth.
Noth.
Yeah. He proposed a totally different idea. He thought maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe Deuteronomy doesn't belong with the Pentateuch at all.
Whoa, a real rebel.
Right. He thought it might actually fit better with those historical books.
Joshua, Judges, all those.
Exactly. Like an introduction to them. And a standard to judge the kings.
So he saw Deuteronomy as less of a law code and more of a, like, a political and theological framework.
For evaluating leadership, yeah.
Interesting. Okay, so we've got Tewet linking it to Josiah Wellhausen, saying it's its own document. What did Noth think about the timing?
Good question. So there's another big name, Gerhard von Rad.
Von Rad.
He comes along and challenges the assumption that Deuteronomy must have been written right before Josiah's reforms.
Okay.
He pointed out that the ideas in Deuteronomy, they could have been around much earlier.
Like floating around, influencing things.
Exactly. Maybe gradually shaping religious practices and ultimately inspiring Josiah.
So Josiah's reforms were like the culmination of a long process.
Right. It's like Deuteronomy planted the seeds, and then centuries later,
Josiah's reforms were the fruit that grew from them.
Perfect analogy.
Yeah.
And then more recently, we've got Gordon Wenham.
Okay. When?
He argues that that whole emphasis in Deuteronomy on one chosen place for worship.
Right.
It doesn't automatically mean Jerusalem.
It doesn't.
Not necessarily. It could be talking about earlier central sanctuary.
Like where?
Places like Shiloh, which was important before Jerusalem became the capital.
Oh, I see. So we've got all these scholars looking at the same clues.
The same text.
But coming up with different interpretations, different pieces of the puzzle.
Exactly. And even today, there's no definitive answer about when Deuteronomy was written.
So it remains a mystery.
In a way, yeah. But that's what makes it so exciting.
Keeps us guessing.
Right. It keeps us asking questions, digging deeper. Appreciating, like, the complexity of this ancient text.
So where does this leave us with Deuteronomy 12?
Right. How does this one chapter fit into all these different theories and perspectives?
Yeah, where does it land?
Well, even though there's this ongoing debate about when it was written, there's a lot we can learn from chapter 12.
About what?
About what it was trying to achieve. Remember, this chapter reflects a tension.
A tension.
Between centralizing worship in one place,
mm-hmm.
and maintaining that sense of community, you know, that feeling of connection in all those different locations throughout the land.
Right, right. Like, how do you balance those two things?
Exactly. It's that contrast, right,
yeah.
Between that one place for all the sacred offerings and then those more everyday meals, like the meat-sharing feasts.
Right, right. So, which they could still have in their own towns and cities.
Exactly. In the city gates, right?
Yeah.
Deuteronomy 12, it gives all these detailed instructions for both types of gathering.
Like a how-to guide.
Kind of, yeah. Who can participate, what kind of meat is okay, you know.
Yeah.
All that stuff. And it's clear that both were important.
For, like, keeping a good relationship with God.
And for their social life.
Yeah.
Their communities.
So even though they're moving towards a more unified system,
mm-hmm.
one central place of worship.
It wasn't about wiping out all their local customs and traditions.
Right. It's not like everybody do everything exactly the same way now.
No, no. And Dr. Parker really emphasizes this. Mm. She says this tension, this back and forth between the one place and the many places.
Mm.
It's super important for understanding, like, the deeper meaning of Deuteronomy 12.
Okay, color me intrigued. What's this deeper meaning then? What's Deuteronomy really getting at here?
Yeah, so remember those big themes we've been talking about?
Yeah.
National identity, living out the covenant, creating a society where God is front and center.
Yeah, those are kind of running through the whole book, aren't they?
Right, and Deuteronomy 12, it brings all these themes together in this really powerful way.
Okay, I'm ready. Let's unpack it. How does this chapter speak to national identity?
Okay, picture it. You've got all these different tribes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Scattered across the land, each with their own stories, their own ways of doing things.
Right.
Bringing them all together to worship in one central place, a place chosen by God.
Mm-hmm.
That creates a powerful symbol of unity. It's like saying, look, we're one people. We're united by our faith, by our commitment to God's law.
It's like a pilgrimage.
Yeah.
Going to that one place, it becomes a physical act of belonging.
Right.
A reminder that they're part of something bigger than themselves.
Exactly. And that shared identity, it was crucial, you know.
For what?
For building a strong nation, especially when they were going into this new land, facing all these challenges and unknowns.
Makes sense. Okay, so we've got national identity. What about living out the covenant? How does Deuteronomy 12 connect to that?
Okay, well, remember, the covenant isn't just some abstract idea, right?
Right.
It's a relationship. A living, breathing relationship between God and his people.
Okay.
And that relationship, it's expressed through actions, through choices. And what does Deuteronomy 12 do?
What?
It lays out specific ways to live out that covenant, to make it real in their everyday lives.
That's like a practical guide.
Exactly. Like, okay, here's how you put your faith into action.
How to translate those big promises into, like, tangible things.
Rituals, behaviors, yeah. Even social structures.
Right. So it's not just about, like, individual piety.
No, it's bigger than that.
It's about creating a whole society that reflects God's will.
A society where justice and compassion and faithfulness, they're just woven into the fabric of life.
Which brings us back to that idea of God being at the center.
Right.
Deuteronomy 12 isn't just about worshiping in the right place, is it?
It's about a whole way of life.
A way of life that revolves around God's presence and guidance.
Exactly. Aligning your choices both individually and as a community with God's law. And Deuteronomy presents that as...
That's the key to what?
The key to true flourishing. For the people, for the land, for everything.
It reminds me of that that vision we talked about earlier.
Oh, yeah.
The promised land as like a potential Eden.
A place where human life and God's blessing, they can exist in harmony.
Right. So Deuteronomy 12, it's like a blueprint.
It is a blueprint for creating that kind of society. A society built on God's law. A society overflowing with blessings.
It's a pretty ambitious vision.
Oh, it is. And, you know, whether the Israelites ever fully achieve that ideal, that's a whole other question.
Yeah.
But the vision itself, it's powerful.
It makes you wonder, right? Well, what parts of Deuteronomy's wisdom might still be relevant today? I mean, we're not ancient Israelites about to enter the promised land.
True.
But we face our own challenges,
right?
Challenges of creating unity, finding shared values, especially in our world today.
Which is so diverse and often divided.
Exactly.
And that's what's so great about Dr. Parker's approach to Deuteronomy. She sees it as more than just an ancient text.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it's a timeless exploration of what it means to build a truly good society.
A society where human flourishing is possible.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And that question, that's as relevant now as it ever was.
So it's not just about, like, the rules themselves.
Right.
It's about those deeper principles.
About thinking about, like, how do we create those chosen places in our own lives?
Their own chosen places?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
Those spaces, right. Whether they're physical or, like, metaphorical.
Okay.
Where we feel connected. Where we share values.
Yeah.
Where we sense something bigger than ourselves.
That's deep.
It is. And Deuteronomy 12, it gives us like a framework for thinking about that.
Yeah.
It reminds us that true unity, it's not about erasing our differences.
Right.
It's about finding ways to connect.
Yeah.
To share, to celebrate what we have in common, even while respecting our unique perspectives.
This deep dive has been full of aha moments. We've gone from detective work to ancient history to thinking about how to build a better world today. And it's all thanks to one chapter in Deuteronomy.
That's awesome.
It is. It really makes you think, you know, like, where are those chosen places in my own life?
Right.
Those spaces, those, I don't know, maybe they're actual places.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they're just like ideas or communities where I feel that sense of connection, of shared values.
Yeah.
Like I'm part of something bigger.
It's a good question to ask yourself, for sure.
It is.
And Deuteronomy 12, it gives us some interesting things to think about.
Yeah.
Like maybe it's about honoring both the universal and the particular.
Yeah.
You know,
okay.
Celebrating what unites us, but also like recognizing the uniqueness of each person, each individual.
Yeah, I like that. Well, this deep dive has been quite a journey.
It has.
We've gone from like detective work to ancient history to reflections on how to build a better world.
Yeah.
And it's all come from one chapter in Deuteronomy.
That's amazing.
It is. And for everyone listening, here's a final thought to chew on.
Okay, shoot.
If Deuteronomy, you know, if it offers us some kind of guidance for building a just and flourishing society,
mm-hmm.
what parts of its wisdom speak to you, regardless of, you know, your background, your beliefs?
Right.
What are the chosen places in your life? Those spaces, those practices that that nurture that sense of belonging, of shared values.
Keep exploring.
Keep asking questions. Who knows what amazing discoveries you might find?
Happy deep diving, everyone.
Huh.